I'm going to talk about it as a leader in the department, or even, coming up in the department, develop those relationships, but really invest in people. You'll be paid back in gold.
The First Responder Liaison Network is proud to present to you the Kitchen Table Podcast, where our guests come share their stories, their perspectives, and their message, talking all things leadership. Now here's your host, Berlin Mazza.
Welcome everybody to the Kitchen Table. The Kitchen Table is brought to you by the First Responder Liaison Network. The network is organized for the development, implementation, and ongoing support of mentorship and professional development programs inspiring our youth and young adults to mature into engaged civic leaders and resilient community sentinels. Music and graphics are brought to you by Kyle Fender Productions. And today our conversation, we're going to talk heavily on building relationships with your people, finding mentors inside and outside the fire service, and also being a mentor to others intentionally. Our guest is going to dive into the concept of building your own wolf pack, that is, establishing a group of individuals that will challenge you and challenge your way of thinking, people that will give you honest feedback, a group of people that you can always bounce ideas off of to learn from and to help them grow and learn as well. Our guest is going to talk heavily on reading, always staying connected, and always staying relevant. Leaders are readers. Today, our guest is from the Big Island of Hawaii, a 20-year veteran of the fire service, currently an engine captain, a Type 3 incident commander, and fully credentialed planning section chief. Our guest served as the initial incident commander on the 2018 Leilani eruption event, where his team stayed engaged for approximately 6 weeks. Our guest has also served as a Type 3 incident commander on some of the Hawaii state's largest fires. Our guest is a self-admitted training addict who has served as a firefighter, a hazmat technician, a fire inspector, fire investigator, fire equipment operator, and currently an acting battalion chief. I know it's good afternoon over there on the Big Island, but it's actually good evening here in the Pacific Northwest. Thank you, Captain Gibson, for joining us today on the Kitchen Table. How are you?
I'm well. Just one correction. I am a captain on the Big Island, and I act up occasionally. That was the only correction, and it made me sound way more important than I am. So I appreciate that.
Of course, of course. And I do want to thank Captain Jason Lundeen of Renton Regional Fire Authority and previous guest on the Kitchen Table, Ben Thompson, Battalion Chief Thompson, who was on the show earlier this year. And I understand that the three of you are all PAC members. And before we dive into that, I just want to throw that out there. I'm sure we're going to dive into the Wolf Pack and that all bit. But thank you, Jason, and thank you, Ben, for introducing and connecting Troy and I to on the so we can have the conversation on the Kitchen Table. So before we get started, though, Troy, if you wouldn't mind, share a little bit about Captain Gibson. You know, tell us about, you know, where you work, your upbringing, fire service, and just your leadership journey thus far.
Absolutely. Appreciate that. And I think the most appropriate thing as a Wolfpack member is to howl, give a little howl.
There you
so
go.
That's for all you Wolfpack members out there. But, I'm a self-admitted mama's boy. My mom has been my inspiration throughout my life. And, I have a wife that I truly don't deserve and has supported me throughout the bulk of my fire service. So I always start off with thanking those two ladies. They're kind of my foundation. One kind of built me, and one is the sculptor that is still molding. So
of course.
Awesome. Father of four, two boys, two girls. I have two olders, so I have two grown children. My son just got married.
Oh,
super
congrats.
Proud. My daughter just got her master's degree in geology.
Wow.
Absolutely proud of that. And I have two little ones. I have a five-year-old and a year and a half-year-old. So they keep me busy. The kids just amaze me, always make me a better person. They're the reason I exist to be better. Social butterfly by nature, for sure. I love meeting and talking to new people, whether it be a stranger or buddies in a training or just, you know, people who are flying to my station or working overtime. So
Yeah.
I'm definitely a social person. So that's definitely who I am. You know, I don't have a lot of hobbies nowadays because of 5 and 1 year old.
Absolutely.
I'm sure everybody can relate to. So my life revolves around quelling temper tantrums and making sure we're getting to bed on time for school. But you know, when we do have time, my wife and I are definitely culinary enthusiasts. I'm
Oh,
a
wow.
large mammal, so I do like to eat and I like to cook, and we like to travel. We're adventurous in that nature. And I'd say, you know, before I talk too long just about myself, which is always fun to do, I believe in the four F's, you know, family, faith, friends, and firefighters, man. That's me
That's
in a
it.
nutshell. You know, I'm here to better my community. I serve on, you know, Hawaii Wildfire Management Organization's board, which is very active, particularly since the Lahaina fires, but many civic organizations, as well as being that training addict you referred to, because that is totally something I'm into. So, you know, my fire burns hard for fire, and I believe it should.
Yeah.
It's the best job in the world. So.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It certainly is. And you know, that's I guess that's what we got in the service for, right? Is for service. And what firefighter would be a firefighter that wasn't all in all the time. Yeah.
Exactly. I
So
couldn't
what,
have said that better.
but let's start here. The Leilani eruption of 2018. Wow, feels like it was just yesterday. I remember seeing the footage on, you know, on TV, and can't believe that was about 6 years. Yeah, 6 years ago now. You were the incident commander. In fact, if I remember correctly, you were in a wildland urban interface class when that eruption occurred, and you were not the first arriving company, but you were the first incident commander there. So, for the listeners, we're talking about the Leilani eruption of 2018. Tell us, give us a brief overview again for the listeners about that event. What transpired? We're going to go and talk about leadership. We'll talk about incident command. Let's talk about all that.
Sure. You know, you hit it on the nail. Our Hawaii is east and west side. It's about 2 hours to the other side of the island from where I live. So I was sitting in a class, and you know, you're just in the class, and everybody's phone starts pinging, and looking at each other. So at some point, you know, I'm picking up my phone and I'm looking at that, and you don't know what it is. We've had, you know, all kinds of events over here that were false alarms. Then my phone started buzzing pretty hard. I noticed that was the deputy fire chief at the time. And I guess I should backtrack a little bit. We're a brand new team who Maui had helped us kind of build our team. So, you know, we're a team, but we're super new. And this will be my first deployment. So there's a lot of leadership lessons we can get to in it. But,
Yeah.
long story short, he calls me and says, "Can you put a team together for this Leilani incident?" And I'm pretty much like, "Yes, sir." Question mark. Call up the section leads, get them pushing into. And at that time, it's like you're just calling up guys because we're not established section leads. Everybody's just new. So I call them section leads now because we've got a little bit of experience, but at the time
Sure.
it's hey man, can you get over here? The chief said I gotta meet him in civil defense. We're about to deploy. They're like, "To this?" And I was like, "Yes." And nobody's coming. Typical in Hawaii, right? You know
Sure.
your island. We're all aware of that. So you get in there, you get your brief, and I'm skipping a lot of stuff, but I'm trying to just paraphrase this.
Yeah.
Get out on scene. They did have the mobile command post out there. It's a big RV basically. I'm looking at my brothers and sisters, you know, who are the in district company, and they're absolutely spent. Worked their butt off, man. Hats off to those guys. And kind of worked some kind of change of command. Shortly thereafter, once we take command, you start getting flooded with news. Politicians, just people in general, coming and we're chasing our tail there, and there's a lesson to be had there. But we were there, and the big mantra we have that we were taught is the goal of an incident management team or in the fire service in general is do no harm and try to leave it better than it was before you got there. So at some point, and this is, I don't know if the listeners fully kind of dove into it, but it's lava coming out of the ground in spots in fountains, and you don't know where, when, and we had the geologists there, but they don't know either. And unprecedented event, Mount St. Helens was the only thing close to it. So the ground starts rocking. There's a lot of earthquakes, and your RV shaking. And at some point, somebody smarter than me said, "Maybe we should get out of here. We're probably a little too close." And I that sounds like a great idea. Let's relocate. So we ended up in with our mobile command post at Pahoa Fire Station, and then from there it becomes somewhat of a stable command post. You start trying to mobilize it, but one thing we identified early is, hey, we're brand new, we need help. And we called Maui because that's who trained us, that's who experienced. And Maui had access to Type One type guys, and actually Chief Lefebvre, I might have been on Mount St. Helens, which is super awesome. So I have to give credit to Chief Tyne at the time. He's retired now, but he was the fire chief of Maui. They mobilized pretty quickly, but if I can kind of sum it up, for 3 days with minimal sleep, we're just trying to chase a tiger by his tail. So it's a great experience as far as that goes, but obviously Maui comes in, we interface with them, we work with them. Obviously, it's our island, our local politics are something that no different from anywhere else. It's going to be a little hard to navigate. And Oahu's team came in. We took over, kind of did a little cycle, but our chief said, you have to keep your leads there, basically at some point, just for that local kind of knowledge and dealing with everybody. But I mean, the history behind it is, anybody who's familiar with it is, we had, from the Air Force bringing in air traffic controllers controlling our airspace because there's issues with that, to the National Guard running security, to DOFA, PTA working with us. We tapped on the state crash crew, so the airport firefighters, they came in. It was a beautiful collaborative effort just to try to, mitigate something that's unmitigatable.
Well, as far as context, how large scale was this incident? I mean, I obviously understand that there were hundreds and hundreds of homes that were lost, but in terms of the geographical space, if you will, that this occurred, what are we talking? Like, are you talking hundreds of square miles or?
I think it was probably a little under that. The effect of it, because of you could definitely kind of extrapolate it out, because the effect of it is, and I'm trying to kind of say this so people who are not in Hawaii understand it. There's a volcano X amount of miles away, but the eruptions are happening downstream. Gases popping. Obviously there's obviously sulfur dioxide and what have you. And the event doesn't just, it's not just lava coming out of the ground and destroying homes and property, and which is terrible, obviously, but it's actually some of the issues that'll happen miles away. And when you build those contingency plans and those trigger points, you almost, we kind of separated into a few different kind of areas, because where the earthquakes are happening will be locally, but also we have to watch what the volcano's doing, because the volcano's not near us.
I see.
These are eruptions. This is fissures coming out of the ground, nowhere near a volcano. And I do urge everybody, look at some pictures. There's a lot of pictures out there.
I have. I've seen.
absolutely amazing, but you really are covering a large area. So the fire chief at the time, Chief Rosario, was very cooperative and kind of giving us as much as he could give us. But it came to the point where we kind of just controlled 911s in that area, even from dispatching, because you'll saturate your regular system. So you kind of get a big box. And then if something happens, ash falling or whatever, which all did happen miles away where we're not, you have to build those plans for it. So, the credit is due to the team. The credit is due to all my mentors and my brothers and sisters from Maui, and especially the Type One guys, Chief Lefay guys, helping. But
We'll talk about that relationship piece. You said Maui had come over. Does Maui have the most robust team when it comes to large scale incidents? And why Maui? And I understand that Honolulu is more dense in terms of
sure.
population, but also bigger of an island and so on and so forth. That's just so how it happened that Maui is just a more robust incident management teams they have out there, or.
So, not necessarily, but one, I'd say Maui's closest
Closest, okay. So
to
geographically
us.
closest, okay.
And two, we trained with Maui. So,
Oh, I see.
any of your incident management listeners know it's very important, kind of, if you're going to blend teams, they speak the same language.
Absolutely.
And, that was really easy for us. These are literally the people who taught us, and relationships paid dividends. And
Absolutely.
it's kind of been an imprint in my career, is those relationships, which, ties into wolf packs and all those kind of, family kind of oriented things, which I'm extremely passionate about. But their location and the fact that we trained together, they certified a lot of us.
Wow, that's
Works.
awesome. How often do you guys train together? Like the islands, all of them. I mean, do you guys all get together like on an annual basis? They're large scale drills. Is it regular? Do you guys have, Maui, Honolulu, Big Island, Kauai all get together and do drills? Or how does that relationship work?
So at that time, I would say, at least kind of building our leads, we were there a couple times in Maui with them, kind of building our team up and training. For different classes, they would have come, hey, we got a class. You want to bring a few people? Hey, we're going to burn. You want to come over and get some ink in your book? It slowed down, and I think we're building back towards it. The chiefs have since retired, so it takes the new chiefs a little bit of time to kind of get their feet, on the ground planted. And, we're in a lull right now, and I think we're building right back up. So I'm optimistic, and at the end of the day, I'm not gonna be here forever, and we're thin, just like all the other islands, so Oahu, all of us. And we want to build some of those young people. I think all of our departments have pretty new fire chiefs, and we have young departments. So now is the time we're going to start building the team-wise stuff.
A team-wise, so absolutely. How big are your departments? For example, is Maui its own fire department? Is there multiple departments in Maui and multiple in the Big Island, multiple in Oahu or Honolulu, or?
Yeah, so we're all on the same local,
Oh,
which
all of you are.
we're all the same local, but our departments are all separate. So
Okay.
Maui has multiple islands: Molokai, Lanai, obviously Maui, Oahu is Oahu, Kauai is Kauai, and Big Island is Big Island. We're, 400-ish. Maui's, I think, a little bit under us. Oahu, they're 1,000 something. I don't think they're at 1,000 yet. And Hawaii is at least a few hundred, and that's doing dirty math there, but
But so we're approximately 2,000 as far as local members,
yes,
but five different fire, or sorry,
four.
four different fire departments. And then the Oahu, is it the Honolulu Fire Department? Is that what it is?
Yeah, so it's Kauai Fire Department, Maui Fire Department, Honolulu Fire Department, so
Honolulu Fire.
the and we're
Got it.
Hawaii Fire Department. So,
Oh,
oh,
okay.
Adam, who's HFD?
Okay. There you go. The original
Yeah,
HFD.
fun social time jokes.
Yes, we got him, right? Firefighters, we got him. Let's talk about some of the challenges. You were, like I said, the incident commander in terms of at this large scale incident in Leilani. Sorry, the Leilani eruption. Talk about some of your lessons learned and or challenges, but also opportunities when it comes to leadership. Like, what did you learn? What did you take away? What would you say, is something that you would instill in our listeners due to your experiences?
Yeah, I mean, we could. How long do you got, Berlin?
Right, right. Yeah, exactly.
I mean, there's a few things that stick out, and when you need help, ask for it quick. And I can't take credit for that, but a great new team with some of my fire department mentors actually working as section chiefs, technically under me. That's kind of, listen to your people. So that's another one, right? Listen to your people. Ask for help early and often.
Yeah.
No, those are huge things that I think I learned very young in my fire service career, and I can tie it right back to Leilani. The next thing is be okay with not knowing, because that whole incident, I didn't know anything. I
Yeah.
mean, it just your first incident is, oh yeah, take this wild incident that CNN's covering, and you'll make it work. And as firefighters do, we make it work as best as we can. And the other thing I would say in that is what I learned is the investment that I spent in training with Maui, whomever, other people in my department that maybe don't work close to me. It just the investment in training and getting to know people, it really allowed us to gel quickly. And the reason I understand that is because we had two team mentors here locally that had worked on Hurricane Katrina type stuff. The other one, he's referred to in the fire service as a, fire god working for the State Department. And these were just kind of really mentors whispering in our ear, and some of the feedback said is the way we could gel very quickly, the way we respected each other and listened to each other. You could tell there was relationship foundations there, and of course those are now cemented. But building those relationships outside of, we're all firefighters, we all have our internal wolf packs, we all have our station groups, we all have our crews that love each other. But when it's really big and when things really need to get done and you need outside resources, you are better served if you're comfortable with those people, you've worked with them, there's relationships established, because you'll get to work much faster. And in the ICS world, we IMT world, we call that kind of a you'll hit your battle rhythm quicker.
Yes, I love
And
that.
that's important, and that's one thing I learned just from their feedback. The AR was a couple days because it's such a large incident, 6 weeks. And we let our mentors kind of run that, and we and actually bringing those mentors in and being, there's another great lesson there is accepting the help from unconventional sources. And that's, Hawaii is beautiful in that regard, is everybody wants to help. And I think in general, the fire service, that's the nature, but I truly believe our community is that. And these mentors were getting thrown at me, just this random guy is calling me up, hey, I think this guy can help you. And being, oh yeah, bring him down.
Yeah, I'll take
Not,
it.
oh no, we got it, or you can't come on our turf or anything. None of that, and I've really carried that throughout my career.
So it sounds like what you're saying is it, being a good leader is it's about building those relationships, those connections, right? I mean, always
Absolutely.
having the ability to pick the phone and call somebody because somebody knows you and you know them, calling for help, saying, yes, I'll take the help. I need the help. I mean, those relationships are we talk about that quite a bit too, is I mean, just establishing those relationships. You talk about asking for help early and often. Build relationships early and often because you don't know when you might need that help or
Yeah.
that mentorship or all the above. I know you talked about, being comfortable not knowing, right? Being okay with not knowing what to do, being okay with not having all the information, all the answers. Talk about your experience in being okay with that, but still being able to keep composure, still being able to, command an incident, still being able to lead your team, your group, members of your fire department, because you were okay not always having the answer to everything.
Well, there's self-reflection that takes, and I would say I definitely lost my composure a few times team-wise, but that's what a strong group does, right? You build off each other's strengths and weaknesses, and having that team and being receptive. I've always tried to be receptive. It was the way, Chief Time kind of taught me, because he's my IC mentor for sure. And you have to be okay with that, but you have to understand. And for us, it's very easy. This is an island. We're the only people here. Nobody else is coming, so you can't shy away from it. And no different from in the fire service. I'm sure we can all remember our first fire. I mean, you're excited about it, but if somebody says they weren't a little scared, that's not really true. We know you're scared. First, when you get in a door in a smoky room, it feels weird, and it still feels weird, and it should, but you kind of just, you're okay with, not being okay in that sense. And I don't mean it in the sense that, the term that goes around. So I would say, be comfortable being uncomfortable. That's important, because this is a job we are going to be uncomfortable with. And what fortifies that is the group of people around you, your training. It could be your experience, because that's the best thing, right? I got to roll the decks that runs. Oh yeah, I've seen this. I kind of know. But obviously, those experiences that you have where you don't have it in your Rolodex, those are your most trying moments. And I think leaning on the people around you, having some kind of calm, about it, and process, for me, is huge. Have a process. ICS is great for that, and then being able to lean on those people who have been there before, like I said, like we've talked about, building those relationships, and saying, I'm okay, I'm gonna call somebody, I'm gonna accept help.
Well, I mean, we talked about this yesterday. I mean, gaining years worth of experience if you put yourself in uncomfortable spots intentionally instead of, waiting for those opportunities. I mean, that's where it's at. I mean, we may not always be ready for something, right? But then you could always be waiting for something. It's like, why wait for an opportunity to come, or why wait for an opportunity that may never arise? Put yourself out there early to gain those experiences, because you'll never know what you'll learn from it on the other end.
Yeah, and I think, that's something, all firefighters should really do, is the more you train, the more the kind of overtimes you take on weird incidents, or whatever it may be, you're kind of building yourself in that regard. And you're also allowing an interaction with people, because I can learn from other people's mistakes. Maybe not as good as if I'm making it myself, but I can learn. And that's the goal of knowledge sharing. And that's important, because we live in a world where mistakes cost lives. It's an important job. It's a dangerous job, and it's a serious job. And you need to kind of remember, the goal is to retire and have a good retirement, and that's, it's, early in your career, you don't really realize that, at the 20-year cliff, you start thinking about that. And I'm grateful for positions I was put in, and people had confidence in me to do that, because it's allowed me to be comfortable being uncomfortable.
And we talk about that so much. Being uncomfortable is just a state of, should be a state of normalcy, if you will. I mean, we shouldn't find ourselves being comfortable every day, because growth occurs when you are not in your comfortable zone all the time. So, in terms of, just in terms of context, in terms of how's Maui recovering after the wildfires of 2023? I mean, is it, obviously devastating? Prayers obviously go out to everyone that was affected, obviously still a year later, or almost a year later. But how's Maui recovering? And did you guys respond over there? I'm sure you guys did. You guys, all the islands helped out.
So, I mean, they're doing as good as could be expected. It's no different from anywhere else in Hawaii. The community's strong. They support each other. But when you talk about an event that is, the largest, loss of life in U.S. history in X amount of 100 some years, I think, 100 plus. I mean, it touches home. That's going to take a long time to recover from. They are doing the best they can do. Absolutely. There's excellent talent over there, a fantastic community, and a state behind them. So they will bounce back. They will be resilient. I have no doubt about that. As far as what we did, as far as engage, that's definitely a team type thing. And we reached out. We've gotten short to the point in our department where we don't have enough qualified people to field a full team. So we're working on that. But obviously, those of us who are, we kind of reached out to the team. And it was one of those things where they had so much help. It was better. We stayed back.
I see.
They had California Type 1 teams there,
Right.
and we know we'll be continuing to help whenever they need. So we did not deploy
Okay.
over there. We definitely sent from our department some people to help out their EOC. So we sent support that way, and where they're at, they're starting, I believe, the recovery phase, and it's gone in phases, and it's going to be a long road. You're talking about infrastructure,
Yeah.
you're talking about major issues, and anybody who's been to Lahaina can kind of put that
Yep.
picture in mind. And
Absolutely.
I didn't even know about it. So we had fires over here in my district. So my wife woke me up early that morning and said, "Hey, there's a fire going on." So I said, "Okay, well, I'm just gonna kind of get into work early." So of course I go to work and there's no apparatus there. So I just drive my car out, find a spot to park and kind of say, "Hey, I'm here." When
Yeah.
my guys get on duty, they'll bring a vehicle out. And we had multiple fires that day. So, I had a dirty face and, smelled like a barbecue the whole
Sure.
day on our side. But the winds were just, it's nothing I've ever dealt with before. But somebody had said something, I think, 24 hours after work, and I said, What happened in Lahaina?" And then you finally grab your phone,
Yeah.
dust off of it, and you're like, "Wow," and you just try to reach out to, "Hey, are you guys okay?" And it was tough. That's
Yeah.
tough. I have the utmost confidence in that community,
That's
that
awesome.
fire department, that county, administration, and our state in general.
Well, continued prayers to everyone affected, that community, Maui, all the citizens, all the and everybody over there. So, continued prayers for the recovery efforts there. So, let's talk about you mentioned the wolf pack a couple times. So, here we go. Talk about the wolf pack, what it is, what does it mean to Troy Gibson, where it came about, and also talk about the necessity of it in the fire service.
Yeah, so the wolf pack, like I said, everybody has one, but what I kind of refer to in the wolf pack is this unique bunch of gentlemen that we attended a command and control class at NFA, and I think it was my sixth or seventh class, but it was just a really unique class, diverse group of guys from Alaska down to, southern Florida, and everywhere in between. It's too many to name, but it was just a group that we had. The late Jimmy Smith, retired deputy chief from Philadelphia, Larry Coker, I believe. I might be saying his name wrong, but yes, a retired assistant chief from Louisville Fire Department. It was just a great class where I noticed everything we did was together, and you go to these classes. and you kind of always meet a few guys, and they are your buddies. And that's a very typical model I found in my career, but this was very different though. The whole group was together, including the instructors. And I do have an official title. The Wolfpack would they'd really get after me if I didn't say my title. And my official title in the pack is the Director of Merriment.
The
And
Director of Merriment.
so, I pick where we're going after class and where the festivities, where we're eating,
Yeah.
being a culinary enthusiast,
There
that's
you go.
important.
Very important.
So, we got together and we just really gelled as a group. And I obviously have had many trainings where I met a lot of friends and we shared a lot of info, but this group has stayed in touch. And it really, I'm fortunate to have them. And I wish I had a pack earlier in my career because anything from policies, hey, do you got a policy on this? These are sometimes daily texts or weekly texts.
Yeah.
How do you guys do this? And the ability to bounce things off of other people and or hey, I had this fire. We're getting immediate feedback, pictures even. It's just phenomenal. It allows you to compound your intelligence because we're all stronger than one of us. And
Absolutely.
really what that pack is about, it's not the internal pack. This is an external pack that just supports each other down to our personal lives. We've suffered some personal defeats. I wouldn't say defeats, but losses, and we support each other to the point where the guys in the continental USA, at least they're moving around and visiting each other. We're picking conferences we want to go to. Guys are coming out to Hawaii. It's not just professional friends at that point. The
Yeah.
pack, when I talk about Wolfpack, I'm talking about these are people I love genuinely, and I really do, and they love me back the same way. And what we do is we sharpen each other's skill set.
Absolutely.
I'm definitely not a smart guy, but I know a bunch of smart guys, and
That's
I can
right.
get information in real time, including yourself. I mean, that's how I got to you, and it always grows,
Absolutely. Well, surround yourself, right? I mean, surround yourself with people that'll make you better, and because it'll make us all better. So your wolf pack is was stemmed from the NFA. Is that what it was? The command and control course. That's where you, Jason Lundin. Okay. Based on what you're saying, is everyone needs to have a wolf pack. What you said is your wolf pack is a group of individuals that you came together, you were at a class, at a course, you shared contact information, you built relationships, and from then you share information with each other. I remember talking to Jason one time. He's like, "Yeah, we had this one challenge in my fire department." He would blast a text out to the group. Everyone would give their feedback, their experiences, their lessons learned, and it helps him navigate, how he's going to move forward back at his department. So, I mean, I love this whole wolf pack concept because, we all have to have mentors, relationships outside the fire service, right? And I mean, we're huge over here on, gaining that outside perspective, because you're going to be able to see things that you may be blind to.
I mean, the value of it, really has to do with the openness of it. And that's really what I find is, it's everybody's open, everybody's respectful. Very much so like what you said is when you work inside your department, it becomes an echo chamber,
Agreed.
We all agree on this and everything. And you need those outside perspectives to really challenge yourself, get
Yes.
uncomfortable,
Yes.
be comfortable with being uncomfortable, going through promotion processes and sitting in front of guys. I could sit in front of my crew all day and they'll be like, hey, Cap, you're looking excellent, but they've seen the same spiel, and then I get in front of a pack and it's like, oh man,
They pick you apart.
my hand is hurting,
Yes.
and that's professional development. But even on the policy side, we've got guys from deputy chief and assistant chiefs, and these guys are pumping out. I'll give you not I'll just kind of generalize it. So it was just I think yesterday or the day before, Hey, do you have a policy on X, Y, and Z? And the first thing I text is I was like, we don't have anything on that. So obviously, hey, there's a shortcoming there. Let me to do something about that. And then, all I see is ding, 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 ding. A couple of jokes about Troy doesn't have anything on there. Start seeing the meat and potatoes. Yeah, we have this, this is this. And now I'm seeing them comparing. And there's just knowledge to be gained there. You don't necessarily, like, I don't necessarily have to go to every training because, man, they're sharing so
They're
much with me.
sharing. That's like training at your fingertips.
Exactly. And it's what I really believe in and is why I go to a lot of trainings. I want to share it with my crew. Maybe, maybe they don't have the time.
Yeah,
Maybe I don't
absolutely.
have the time, but when you now compound that on an outside department, maybe we're in a budget crisis. Maybe this department's not, and they get yeses to every.
Yes.
It's just so much better for our communities, our departments, and ourselves
Yeah.
because, like I said, there's a personal element to it that, I've been in some situations where I'm calling up Jason, it's one for sure, and man, I just need to talk to somebody, and
Yeah.
might not be something, that you're comfortable in your house because, we're those type A male and females, and you might need to just feel a little safe downloading outside of your department. Maybe, I don't want to download this at home. So there's too much value. We could talk for 3 or 4 hours of it, but the gist of it is it does nothing but force multiply.
I love that.
Force multiplies
So the
your.
question on that, it's kind of a, I think I know the answer to it, but I kind of want your take on it. So your Wolfpack not only challenges you, but tells you probably things that, first of all, that you need to hear, but probably things that you didn't necessarily want to hear, right? They're honest with you. They might say, Troy, that's actually a terrible idea, or Troy, that mock oral board you just did for your promotion was pretty bad. Like they're telling you these things, right? They're honest with you because they want you to be better. They're not just sugarcoating everything. Hey, nice job. They're being honest with you, right?
Yes. I mean, and even to the extent that I can say, hey, I got this person that's going to sit in front of you guys. I mean, it's not just me. It's like my pack is my internal pack has access to the my external pack. But absolutely. I mean, if I had to count or if I had a nickel for every time one of the pack members told me, yeah, this you could do better on this, I definitely wouldn't need to work anymore. For sure.
So necessary. So let's pound it home. So for the listeners out there, I mean, build your pack, right? Build that wolf
Yes.
pack. Put yourself out there to where people are going to challenge you, right? I mean, you said it earlier. It's a that echo chamber. We need to get ourselves out of that echo chamber sometimes, whether we believe it's true or not. It's there. But put yourself out there, put yourself in a group to where people are going to be honest with you all the time. Because it's going to help you grow.
Absolutely.
Not just having your own wolf pack, but we'll just keep it even let more generic even. Maybe some people aren't necessarily comfortable with, exchanging information at a class. Not everyone gets the opportunity to go to the National Fire Academy. But talk about the importance of just simply stretching outside your department. Maybe making one connection with a firefighter, with an officer, with a mentor. Just talk about the importance of just seeking mentors or information just simply outside your own fire department.
So there's a push lately. I'm noticing some of the periodicals and kind of the podcasts. You're hearing some more talk about mentorship. In fact, one of the PAC members was just talking about they're building a mentorship plan for their department. And I love that concept, right? I was lucky enough in my career to get that from senior firefighters officers. They took me under their wing. And that was great, but everybody doesn't have that. Some people are just not comfortable. Maybe they're a wallflower by nature, and what that does is when you get outside, you lose a lot of that kind of I guess, apprehension that, oh, this is in my department, I'm going to be judged or what have you. It allows you to kind of take a layer of your armor off, it
Yeah,
disarm,
love
and then
that. Yep.
you can just be you. I've gone to trainings with guys where maybe it's their first training and they're really uptight, and the biggest thing I say is, hey man, these guys won't work with you ever.
Yeah.
You just be yourself. It's the best thing you can do is be yourself. And they loved it. And being able to kind of stretch outside that, we're talking about your retirees reaching out. I'm a big fan of, just because they retired doesn't mean they lost their
Yeah.
knowledge.
Yeah, true. That's true.
When I talk about, the fire god,
Yeah.
I don't want to say his name, and but anyways, he knows. Big Bob knows who he is, and you get to pick somebody like that's brain.
Yeah.
You can't. I could call him and say, "How do you change a tire?" And I guarantee I'm coming out with
Yeah.
some kind of knowledge that's
Yeah.
going to make me a better leader. And those people are passionate. They've paid their dues, and they're still willing to pay it and invest. And that just motivates you also to kind of see, maybe you're in a situation where maybe you're at a house you don't like. That happens for sure. It's happened to me. It allows you to kind of reset your batteries or recharge them. Man, you know what? This is the best job in the world. And when you find that pack, you need to stay connected to them.
Yeah.
I can. I should have said that in the beginning. It takes effort to stay connected. And everybody in our pack, I might be one of the chattier ones for sure. I'll take that. But everybody contributes. And that's the big thing, is we stay connected.
Yeah.
You have to make the effort, just like your family. It's no different from a family. If I've got a fourth cousin I haven't seen in 20 years, it's going to be a little weird in the beginning. But if I'm talking to them, once, twice a year, whatever, there's a connection there. If we're exchanging information, if we're being humans together,
Yeah. Well, I
that's
love that you got to be engaged, right? You got to be engaged all the time, not just sometimes. You know,
yes.
I want to be engaged for the next 6 months and then absent for the next 12. I
Yes.
mean, being constantly engaged and, you know, seeking mentors. So a question I have for you is, how many mentors do you have?
Too many to count, to
There you
be
go.
honest. I had
I
to just name
yeah.
them. It'd be very hard,
Love it.
every one of those, was it 19 of us, I think, or something, in that class, they're all my mentors. Of
Love it.
course, Jimmy's passed away, Chief Jimmy, and Chief Larry's still around, but I have mentors inside my fire department that I truly love and cherish. Maui, I have quite a few, and a bunch of other retired ones. Man, I couldn't name them all, but Sensei, you're one of them. And it's just, I'm just shouting out, some of
Yes.
the people who are extremely impactful in where I've come. But I can say honestly, I've had junior firefighters, even drivers. My current driver right now, he's a mentor. I mean,
Yeah, I love that.
I'm down.
I love it. I love it. I know that's funny. We hadn't even talked about that, but I knew what your answer was gonna be. It's just I love that. It's just like sometimes people will think of mentors as it has to be someone that's older than you. It has to be someone that is more senior than you. No, I mean I've got mentors like you just said. I have a mentor, you know, that drive for me. You know, I was seeking a letter of recommendation for this thing that I was working toward. And I had one of my firefighters write one for me. I had my driver from previous years write one for me, you know. So I had this whole concept or this whole belief that a mentor has to be someone that's, you know, so much more experienced than you is not true. I mean, a mentor is someone that just is able to give you feedback, someone that you could learn something from, which is everybody. We could learn from all kinds of people. So I love that you said that you have 19. You know, you have mentors from all kinds of departments inside, outside the fire service. I mean, that's growth. That's key. That's leadership.
Yeah, it is. And I'd be remiss to say My mother's my biggest mentor.
There you go. Yes.
My wife's, she's definitely a 1A to
There you
one.
go.
You know, and
Absolutely.
aunts, uncles, cousins, my
Yeah.
children.
I heard you say this one time in a previous conversation. You said that you ask your firefighters who are your mentors, who are invested in your professional development. That's something that you ask your firefighters, yeah? What are some of the
I
responses that
do.
you get? And what do you do to guide them?
Well, so the nexus of that conversation and the reason I do ask them that is obviously the brand new ones coming out, they're not going to have, but if you start asking kind of senior members, what I'm trying to identify is, has everybody gotten the same level of interaction that I received? Because I truly think I'm blessed in that regard with my first captains, my first drivers, my paramedics I worked with, and what I saw was there was a little bit of disconnect in kind of where we're at in the department. Is there's a lot of guys you learn a lot from. There's a lot of guys, you definitely want to emulate. And this is conversations with other guys who have been around the similar time is, the best quote I would say is, it's Chief Scott Booth of Gig Harbor, who's in the pack, is, and I'm sure he borrowed it from somewhere, is they will not care what you know, care about what you know until they know you care. And that talks about that mentorship that you're actually investing in the people. And I've given JPRs and seen firefighters tear up, and that's pure emotion. And I've been given JPRs and teared up that because that's truly understanding people care. And the reason I asked them that is because unfortunately I was finding that I wasn't getting a lot of good answers. So any chance I get to talk about it, which is, I'm here. I'm going to talk about it as a leader in the department, or even, coming up in the department, develop those relationships, but really invest in people. You'll be paid back in gold.
Exponentially.
Numerous people promoted under me, beside me, above me. Mean, it's just that pack mentality, and really on the mentorship side. The investment it takes. I mean, we live with each other just as much, if not more, than we live at home. So why shouldn't we be a family just like that? And that's how I run my firehouse, is we are a family. And I always say, so I'm on C shift, B shift, and A shift. Well, those are your first cousins. So your family, everybody's your family, but this is your family. Like, we're going to battle together. We have to be tight, in sync, and we have to love each other. That's important.
How many people do you mentor?
I would say actively, if I kind of am doing a soft count, I'd say there's at least like 10 or 12 that, I get random calls. And it could be personal calls, and I really take more value in those. New dads, what have you. It's not just the fire department, mentorship, but I'd say there's a active 10 or 12 that I'm really doing. But anybody I touch, I try to. You got to
There
be
you go.
receptive to it. That's the key to this whole pack mentality. You have to go in and disarm yourself.
Yes, it'd be vulnerable and it's going to be a two-way relationship, right?
Absolutely.
So, what would you say is one of the biggest challenges that you faced as an emerging leader, right? Early on in your career when you were pursuing possibly becoming a captain one day, a company officer. What would you say is one of the biggest challenges that kind of you remember? But then also, how did you navigate that knowing that you were a newer, upcoming leader in your organization?
I think being, closer to 50, and touching the older generation, who, the baby boomers, but they touched the even older, and then, seeing, the newer generations, and watching the biggest challenge I would say is watching the fire service in general. I don't want to just say this is my department, because I know it's more than that, is watching that stagnant time where we were still doing things pretty old school, being rough, you know, as far as, hey, you learn it, you know, I'm give you like three words, get it done, and not kind of embracing the new, you know, generations. You know, you go to fire instructor one, two, they're talking about this stuff is different generations are learning different. And I'm lucky enough, I've got grown children, and you know, it's been a realization now that new firefighters coming in, they're either my like son's classmates or younger. And rather than just being that, you know, which, you know, I grew up in that generation, so I learned from that generation very easily. Yes, sir. You know, let's go. But it kind of, I saw there was a challenge there, and for me, it was, I never have a problem kind of marching off the path if I think it's right. If I have conviction in my heart, I'm gonna go there until a bunch of people tell me it's not right. But it was a challenge to kind of really convince some of my peers, you know, early leaders, people I consider in my pack, hey, we got to do that different, man. You know, are you trying this? And that comes from interactions and just saying, well, hey, I've tried it this way and I'm getting positive results. So the culture change has been the biggest challenge. It's coming along. I definitely see progress, and I'm excited about our in our department, our young firefighters that I make contact with, our up and coming leaders. But that was hard for me to do, and what I had to do to navigate it was just really stay convicted, and seek that guidance from my mentors, my pack, and saying, hey, how are you guys doing this? Are you guys having that same problem? Because you really get lost in, oh man, this is me, or woe is me, I'm going to throw my hands up. But when you start hearing about, oh, this is how we dealt with it, or have you tried this, you know, and it's like, okay, there's still dog left in this fight, and I want to be tenacious. I want to do everything like I fight fire aggressively, with tenacity and a strong constitution, you know, and that's just the kind of a nature that I have. But that was the culture was, and I see it changing. It's still around, you know, but you know, you just what you do is you find out naysayers. Just like anything else, they're a small group, but they're very loud. And if you're going to be a progressive and support your administration and move forward and teach the young people and invest and kind of gather all this information and execute it, what you find is we'll be the silent majority, and eventually it will just eat you up. And that's what happens with our actions, you know. You know, we'll have a megaphone also, as we should. You know, I try to teach people to speak up. That was something I didn't do early, and I encourage my younger guys, speak up. You know, you have a voice. It counts. It matters. You know, it doesn't matter where you're from or what your rank is. You know, that's important. Diversity in all walks of life is going to improve you as a person and us as a species even.
Since we're talking about, culture change, we're talking about, progression. Let's talk about some action items that firefighters can do, right? We're talking about leadership, right? We talked about mentorship. We talked about getting out of your comfort zone. We talked about stretching outside your fire department. We're talking about just being comfortable not knowing everything and just putting yourself out there. So, let's talk to newer firefighters in the fire service. What's something those individuals could do to grow as leaders?
Read. I mean, I'll always open up with that. It's you need to read. You need to be a student of the profession. This is to me, and I think to any successful firefighter I've met, whatever rank they may be, it is something you have to study. You can go a career learning something every day, and you'll hear it from the giants in the fire service that you'll never learn everything. But if you just try to learn, and reading is a great way to learn, obviously. There's a lot of information out there on leadership, if we're talking about leadership particularly. But And it'll apply to all of your life. It will apply to being a better father. It'll apply to being a better son, daughter, mother, brother, sister, you name it. So read the first thing and seek out those mentors. I definitely found some wallflowers in the fire service and watered them, let them bloom a little bit, and it's been valuable. But if I was telling a new firefighter, you need to seek out those mentors. You will inherently be exposed to some of the best men and women you will ever meet in your life. But some of them you'll have to actually go initiate contact. And that's where we're talking about that generational difference. Whereas before you had to, and because I'm more of a social butterfly, I think that was very beneficial to me with that generation that came before me, is I would go and ask. And that was, that's from my mom, like, you're not going to know the answer until you ask. So, hey, could you help me with this? Or what do you think about this? Be inquisitive by nature, but seek out the mentors and learn something every day. A lot
Absolutely.
of service leaders say that, but then tying it to a pack, you got to get a pack. Your recruit class is inherently already a pack. So I'm
Yes.
not saying get that pack. I'm telling those new firefighters, you got to get another pack, and you got to get out there and be vulnerable and challenge yourself, and don't be the new guy in the room who doesn't answer any questions, or hey, we're gonna go out to dinner here and I'm gonna go back to rent. No, you get out there and everybody knows the key to any training, but we always talk about with NFA is, well, all the real learning's done at the outhouse.
After, yes.
Outhouse,
All the other, all the real training happens after the training is over. I'm gonna ask one follow-up question on that is, how do you suggest newer firefighters find a mentor?
We're in a job where you should be comfortable talking to people. So I'm going to kind of take that for granted and, be observant. Obviously, pick your target,
Okay.
if you're how you're going to go and look for it, and then just approach them with a general disarmament in there, and don't be afraid to kind of just be yourself. It's, a lot of times, I can remember back in my career, you're kind of scared to talk to the grizzly fireman. No, just get in there and approach it, because guess what? That's kind of our job. It's to meet people in their worst times and give them comfort and be able to speak. And it's also to go into situations that are super uncomfortable. So that ties right back to you be comfortable being uncomfortable and
There you go.
approach and be aggressive.
Be vulnerable, approach, be aggressive. All right, how about tips for the new emerging leader? So talk to a company officer, or maybe that's someone aspiring to be one. What would you recommend those individuals do to start growing as leaders?
Yeah, so this one's great for me. I'll start with the read, obviously.
Yeah.
Maybe you may have a core library now. So now challenge yourself, go talk to people, find out what they're reading, find out what you should have mentors. You should have a pack at this point. So read, find out what they're reading, find, and then talk about it a little bit more, have those kind of deeper conversations. But this is close to my heart. I have a driver bidding for captain, and I tell him, trust yourself, trust your knowledge, trust your skills, trust your abilities. He will not have any problem with the last part that I had a challenge with this as a new officer, is listen more than you ever had. Because, as a new firefighter, you're listening nonstop, and then as a new officer, you feel like I need to have a command presence and this and that. Actually, you don't.
Listen
You
more.
will learn more from listening and getting feedback,
There you go. And
Sure.
being open to feedback too, right? We talked about being receptive earlier. Keep yourself open to listening from someone, accepting feedback, good or bad, and taking that to become better.
That's where you fully embrace your wolf pack.
There you
That's
go.
where you really need the wolf pack. to have some interaction. But you should have built one if you're following my model.
There you go. You should have built one. You should have had one all along. And if you don't, for those listeners out there, build your wolf pack today. Get together. I mean, there's no easier way, right? We got text messaging. We got all kinds of avenues of getting a hold of each other. I know you're in Hawaii. I know you guys joked around talking to you and Jason and Ben. You got someone from the East Coast. You got, the Pacific Northwest. You got Hawaii. Sometimes you're getting a text message in the middle of the night. And Ben's over there at 6 in the morning texting, and you guys are asleep, and you wake up to 29 text messages. So I love that because it's the wolf pack. It's having your group get out there, find one, be intentional about it, because it's only going to help you grow.
Yeah, silence those texts.
That,
Obviously,
yes, because sleep is still
silence the
important.
group discussions.
Yes, you can still see it when you wake up the next morning. So, all right, how about the chief officers or senior leaders of organizations? What would you recommend those groups do to continue to grow as leaders?
Yeah, I think, I mean, and this is, I have obviously less knowledge of this, but I do have a lot of chief officer, friends, mentors, and what have you, and continue to read. Now you're kind of, everything is incremental. But again, that's the common theme, and reading, learning, training, that's going to be kind of challenging yourself. Those are kind of throughout your career. But that's where you, I think, can really develop yourself professionally, right? You're kind of in that administrative role. If that's something you're weak in, I always say attack your weaknesses, right? And that's common, right? Make your weaknesses your strengths, and remember that feelings matter, because now you're really getting into decision modeling, where you're not working with the people at that company officer level. I can read my crew very easily. If they don't like something, there's a instant feedback. At a chief level, I think what the biggest thing is, remember that feelings matter. Your decisions affect people. You're not going to get that feedback. Being contemplative, that's where, if we're not talking about, say, a battalion chief, because that can be a situation where you're making decisions that need to be made. But if we're talking about the administrative level, everything requires a lot of contemplation, inputs, and I would say, those are kind of things I would think that those higher level chief officers need, and they need to collaborate with their pack. That is absolutely important, because, from captain down, at least our model, we're all in the same union. So BC and up. And you'll occasionally hear this, well, they, and they's talking about the ivory tower, the puzzle palace, whatever term you guys have in the Pacific Northwest. But it's really odd when I hear a chief level officer talking about they. And I'm like, I just, sometimes I can't help myself. I say, well, you are they, I am us, and I think you have to remember that. That's a step in a different, arena. The pack is different, and utilize that pack. I think the unsuccessful chief officers, or some of the chief officers, kind of give me feedback, is where they could have been better is when they kind of didn't realize they were in a pack. They felt like they were in between. No, you have a pack. It's just a different pack. We're all serving the same people. The mission is still the same. We're going to protect our communities, and we're going to help our communities. It's very simple. You could go Chief Brunacini, just be nice. I mean, you can do that, but that's what I would tell those chief officers. Remember that you're in a different pack, and you need to actually collaborate with that pack
There you
a
go.
lot more, because those decisions are more impactful.
Well, you mentioned reading's important. You said you got to read, you got to continue to immerse yourself in information because there's so much information out there to be had. So let's start with that. Leaders are readers. We've all heard that. So, Troy Gibson, what are some of your favorite books? What are some recommendations since we just talked a lot about reading?
Yeah, so for me, I don't read as much as I wish I could. I consider myself, and I'll give my battalion chief, Chief Volpe, some credit, because he put a name to it. And I never really thought about it, and I thought it was so catchy that I'm a bit of a book dragon, and the way dragons collect gold, I collect books. I'll listen to a podcast, or somebody will tell me, boom, I'm ordering it. So I'll give you three books,
There you
and
go.
I always say, I'm gonna give you two, and those are just the two books I'm in because I love everything I read. I very seldom will finish a book I don't like. So every book I love, and I'm an avid reader, and I believe in that quote from Harry Truman. But I'm reading The Nine L's by Chief Corley
Only
Moore,
more, yes.
and The Cornerstones of Leadership by Frank Lieb. I'm closer to done with that one.
Okay.
I typically read two books. I don't know if it's just kind of, the hyperactive mind, or, I'm in the fire instructor too. I got to read that book. I don't know what it is, but those two are fantastic books. I love that. But the all-time favorite, like you give me one book and you say, Troy, you can only have one book for the rest of your life. I'm reading Sun Tzu, The Art of War, every day. It's a book I reflect on. It's practical. And one of my mentors, not in the fire service, kind of shared it with me and gave me the perspective of look at it in any perspective you want. But what we do is a battle in the fire service, so it's very relatable. And occasionally, I'll put a quote up and just get people thinking about what does that mean in the fire service. And I actually prepared. I thought I might get some kind of question, so
Yeah,
I'm gonna
what you got? There you go.
up here. And of course, I've got my Art of War up here. There are five dangerous faults which may affect a general. And there's obviously explanations to this, but I think everyone just it's recklessness, cowardice, a hasty temper, a delicacy of honor which is sensitive to shame, and over solitude for his men, which exposes him to worry and trouble. I think any company officer listening to you right now could take those, including yourself, and you could absolutely apply that to your day job. And it
Yes.
shows the value of that book to me. It's phenomenal. I
I
mean,
love it. You talk about you're reading two books at a time. You're talking about, yeah, like a dragon of books, owning a collection. I actually have The Art of War in my office now, and embarrassingly so, I couldn't tell you when I bought it, but I can tell you I have not read it yet. So it's gonna jump back up to the top of my reading list now. So thank you for that.
great book because you don't have to read it. You can just pick out a section. It's the beauty of it. You could literally just,
Pick sections here and there. Don't even. I will read it though. I will read it. It was recommended to me. I can't remember when. It was a while ago. So I bought it, and I just it was it's in a pile of must reads. Obviously, it didn't hit the top yet, but now it will. So thank you.
Fellow dragon.
That's there you go. All right, before we get to the leadership challenge, let's do the listeners challenge. So you've talked about things for groups to start doing to become better. But how about this? Go ahead and challenge all listeners here right now to start doing something to become better.
Yeah, the first thing you should do, and I'll use kind of the late Chief Bobby Halton. He did one of his last conventions out here in Hawaii with us, and day one of the fire station, I make my guys watch one of his keynote speeches. But I challenge you to just remember that this is the best job you ever had, and I believe that in my heart. I challenge you all to remember that every day. Remember what your recruit interview, those things you said in there, and be that person. And never forget that there are hundreds of thousands of men and women that came before you to build this fire service, and honor them every day with your actions. And I wish everybody success in that endeavor, because that will make the fire service exponentially better.
Absolutely. So let's jump right to this. Let's jump to the leadership challenge. This is my favorite part of the show. This is a reason why we're here today, right? We had leaders, previous leaders, speakers, leaders out there inside and outside the fire service who have recommended people to come onto the show to share a message, a philosophy, a concept on leadership. And that's how you and I met, and that's how we're here. So now I get to ask you, Captain Gibson, to challenge someone out there to be a future guest on the kitchen table.
Wow. I think it's only right. I challenged the Wolf Pack. So, how?
There it is.
Battalion Chief Nathan Travis, Little Rock Fire.
There you
I
go.
challenged.
All right. BC Travis has been officially leadership challenged, and I'll gather his contact information, and we'll see if he'd be willing to take you on and take the Wolf Pack as the leadership challenge and be a guest on the show to share a leadership concept. Before we close today on the kitchen table, Cap, lasting leadership thoughts you want to leave our listeners with.
Be passionate, be professional, and like Chief Brunacini says, be nice. Those things are tenets of our profession, and we all forget them, myself included. And your career is gonna have peaks and valleys, but dig yourself out of the valleys and try to stay on the peak as long as you can. It's truly a profession that I love, and I'm honored and grateful to have my family supporting me and my brothers and sisters standing next to me throughout the world. And if you just remember those things, I think you're gonna be fantastic. And remember the end too. It's hard to kind of see the end. It's easier for me at this, but the goal is, to do good and have a great career and enjoy your retirement. Most of us in public service are not going to get rich, but most of us, will be able to retire at an earlier age than common. And be safe out there. You want to enjoy that retirement.
Great message. Thank you so much. And I'm truly honored that we connected, that we had this conversation. The couple phone calls you and I have had offline here prior to this show, connected. I love the message. I love your story. I love your passion. I love the way you portray the information, especially on mentorship and service. So thank you for that. Before we close, anything we forgot to discuss?
For me, my mom would kick my butt if I didn't thank you. Thank you so much for having me on here. I really appreciate what you're doing. I'm a fan of the show. I'm a fan of you, and I look forward to getting some pointers, tips, and enjoying maybe throwing you on the group text and saying, "Hey, another one." It happens. But thank you so much. Thank you for what you're doing. You're not at work right now. This is a labor of love, and I appreciate it. And if there's anything I could say in ending, it'd be just a thank you.
Absolutely. Well, thank you. I'm humbled that you would make such comments. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in today to the kitchen table. We truly hope that you found this time valuable, and we hope that we've inspired you to take action, to lead, and to spread the leadership conversation. Till next time, be safe, be intentional, and stay curious.